The MMQB podcast is brought to you by FanDuel, the leader in one-week fantasy football, with more winners and more payouts than any other site. Enter promo code THEMMQB at FanDuel.com to play a risk-free tournament at up to $10. We're also sponsored by the SeatGeek app, the easiest way to find a great deal, pay for your ticket, and get to your seat. Download the SeatGeek app and enter our code MMQB for $20 off your first tickets. They've said, okay, we've got five mauling offensive linemen up front. We're going to run it down your throat. And then when we're not doing that, we're going to beat you over the top with Cam Newton at the helm.
He's a genius in the pre-snap phase, and he does a lot with adjustments at the line of scrimmage, come out with so many different formations and personnel packages, and then you see mass shifts before the snap.
Welcome to the MMQB podcast, the rotating staff of the MMQB podcast. My name is Robert Mays, and this week I am here with Andy Benoit, not with Robert Klemko, but we're going to make do, but I think we'll be all right.
Yeah, you know, they gave us this three-man booth, and this is our third week, and two out of the 3 weeks, the incumbent hosts have pretty much used the three-man booth as an excuse to not do the podcast one of the weeks. You know, it's like, well, there are all the other guys there, we'll be fine, you know, I can miss this one.
I was kind of hoping that you were going to come back. I was like, uh-oh, what did I do? Andy's just never going to do the show again, and now I'm kind of wondering the same thing about Klemko. He's just out. Two shows with me was enough. We're going to be at a point here in a couple of weeks where it's just going to be me cowherding this thing alone for an hour at a time, which no one wants that. I swear to God, no one wants that. That would be the worst outcome possible. But for now, we have two guys, and I think we're going to be okay. And what we're going to start with is another group of people who just they seem to be falling to the wayside one by one, and that's every NFL contender. It feels like this point in the season, all that's happening – is guys going down left and right. We're trying to piece together which teams are still intact. And the biggest injury of the weekend, I think we have to start with, happened with Cincinnati. You know, Andy Dalton breaks his thumb, I believe the first drive of the game. And
yes, it was.
Single-handedly murders my fantasy season, which, I mean, so few things more frustrating than that. I mean,
that's the most important part. Yeah, that's certainly the
absolutely.
Takeaway there.
I mean, I don't really care about the Bengals' playoff chances. I care about the fact that I lost by, like, 4 points without a quarterback, and I will never, ever get over it. It's just it's a heartbreaking situation. But it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. I think that emotionally I'll bounce back. The question is whether the Bengals are going to bounce back. And I don't know. I think the way the narrative has worked with this team since Dalton got there is that they have a roster that rivals anyone else's in football, and quarterback was always the question. Now we're in a situation where we're looking at, can this roster that's supposed to rival any in football overcome having a backup quarterback? And I don't know how you feel about that. I think that you don't know how good your quarterback is until you don't have him anymore. And I'm worried that if Dalton misses extended time, that's what's going to happen with Cincinnati. How about you?
Yeah, that's the default assumption with any contending team is that, you know, the backup's a backup for a reason. And there are about 15 to 18 quarterbacks in this league who, if they go down, their team is in significant trouble. And Cincinnati has fallen into that camp this season. Now, for the purpose of discussion, let's talk about, I guess, how they could survive. Because, you know, we could sit here and just say they're dead, but there's a good chance this team's going to finish 12-4, and maybe Dalton's back for the playoffs. So how do they tread water with McCarron? What they like so much about Dalton is, and people don't talk about this with him, but the coaching staff raves about this, he's a genius in the pre-snap phase, and he does a lot with adjustments at the line of scrimmage. He gets them in and out of their running concepts extremely well, and you've looked at the way that Hugh Jackson's played this season, and just the way they start games, they'll come out with so many different formations and personnel packages, and then you see mass shifts before the snap, where offensive linemen move out to what looks like wide receiver positions, four or five guys shift, or two guys go, you know, can't have two in motion, but you put a guy in motion, another guy in motion. They do a lot before the snap, and they've got a guy who can oversee all that, and it puts too much on the defense's plate. So we're going to learn a lot about A.J. McCarron this week by just whether they come out and play that way with him, if they come out and have a high-volume offense to begin with.
Injuries in the NFL are twofold. Their impact is twofold. One, you have a downgrade in talent. That's obvious. When you have lesser players in the game, you're not going to be able to operate at a high, at the same type of level. The other one, though, is that there's an impact of simplicity. You lose layers of who you can be offensively and defensively. The first place I think about this is on the offensive line. When you're rotating out guys, you're losing levels of communication, and you just have to go really back to square one of who you want to be. You can't build on those previous iterations of who you're, of what your offense was. So now I think you're going to lose a lot of that stuff. And what made this team the most dangerous, I mean, they were the number one offensive team in DVOA coming into last week. I mean, they've had a really, really nice season. And I think what made them the most dangerous is that they just had so many layers of how they could beat you. Giovanni Bernard was having a really nice year. And you're right, Dalton is so good at getting out of those concepts, putting them in good plays. And I think Bernard was the back that was hitting on those opportunities more than Jeremy Hill was. You had Marvin Jones making a ton of big plays as the secondary option. You had Tyler Eifert making huge strides and becoming an absolute star. So you had those layers. And I think now with McCarron, not only are you worried about that back-breaking pick six like the one he threw last week, but I think you're losing those layers of Jones and Eifert, even if Eifert's healthy. You're going to see more force-feeding A.J. Green, similar to maybe what the Bengals' offense was a couple of years ago when Dalton was, you know, giving A.J. Green 14 targets a game. That's what you lose. Not only do you lose a better quarterback, but you lose the ability to be a more complex, innovative, interesting offense.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that, and that's how it looked with McCarron against Pittsburgh, but, you know, let's take a grain of salt with that because he comes off the bench, so he wasn't getting the reps all week. The game plan's not for him, and Pittsburgh's not an easy defense to, because of their matchup zone principles. They that's a lot to process when you face them. So this will be the revealing week to me, but I think the point you're hitting on, generally that's, you know, if it's going to go badly for the Bengals, it will go in that direction. Yes, you're right. It's things get simplified in a negative way for you offensively. Really, it's you just lose options of what you can do. And if I'll be interested, though, if they don't play that way, if McCarron can just be a watered down version of Andy Dalton, then I think they're going to be okay. You know, not a Super Bowl contender at the moment, but I'm just real curious to see how much they do schematically. I think that will tell us almost everything we need to know. If they try to do as many things with McCarron, they just don't do them as well, but they at least try. That tells you a lot about how the coaching staff feels about him. If they come in as watered down as I'm sensing you think they'll be, that also tells you a lot about how the coaching staff feels about him.
Yeah, I agree. I think that they're set up to be fine, but that was the entire point of this Bengals season, is that they wanted to be more than fine. Unfortunately for us and for football fans and for everybody, they're not the only contender that's seeing guys go down. Dominic Easley is out for the season, back to IR, having a really nice year as part of the rotation for that Patriots team. I don't know who the hell half the Patriots defensive backs are now. There's a guy named Leonard Johnson that's playing. Apparently he's a thing. Carolina loses B'nai Ben Wickery, who, when Charles Tillman would come back from his injury, probably wouldn't play as large a role, but he's played for them most of the season. You have Greg Olsen get hurt. And it really, we're just kind of in a place, again, where who's still playing? You know, Minnesota last week, you think they really put up a pretty good fight in Arizona. They did that without Harrison Smith, Anthony Barr, and Linval Joseph, who are arguably their three best defensive players. Right now, at this point, which team do you think has it, what would be a contender healthy and is now probably out of the running just based on how many players they've lost?
Oh boy, we're talking about like would-be contender as of heading into December or something like that,
sure.
I assume.
Yeah, maybe like Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I'm trying to go through because the guys you've talked about, yes, those are significant injuries in terms of who's hurt, but you know a lot of those guys are going to be coming back. I know Easley's not, and New England's got some makeshift stuff going on defensively, but they're equipped to play that way.
Sure.
They're extremely well coached, not just in scheme, but also whoever's coaching those defensive backs there in New England. And they've got a couple of different guys. It's Josh Boyer's one of them, and he's the cornerbacks coach specifically. And then Brian Flores, the safeties coach, they've done a tremendous job because, Mays, what I learn about watching film and the Patriots embody it best is a lot of times we think these guys who get hurt, we think, oh my gosh, that's the end of it. That's their starting whatever position. But a lot of times it just means it's a different guy that becomes the player there. And things do carry on a lot more than you'd realize. Now, it's different with quarterbacks. The guy you didn't mention, Thomas Rolls in Seattle, it might be different with him. But you know, I look at, like, I'm almost answering your question on the inverse, because I don't know if I see a team that's I think devastated by injury other than what happened with Cincinnati at quarterback. I think, like, Leonard Johnson, for example, looked very good the other night, and they know how to use him, and they can plug and play him and survive. You know, there's a Baltimore broke down at the end of last year, though, and it's continued this season, unfortunately. So there's always the counter argument to that. But why don't I have you answer your own question then? Maybe that'll jumpstart me in one of these discussions, because I don't think there's a team that's really been devastated by injuries this month alone.
Well, first thing I'll say, you're totally right about New England. I mean, Logan Ryan and Malcolm Butler used to be the guys that, like, oh no, Logan Ryan and Malcolm Butler have to play now. And that's right. That's no longer a thing. Those guys are good, which... whatever, I go home.
Have we ever seen a guy, Malcolm Butler especially, and Logan Ryan's played extremely well the last few weeks. He matches up to their bigger receiver in man coverage. Butler takes the smaller one, even if that's Beckham or Brown, they'll put him on them one-on-one. Have we ever seen a guy like Butler who goes from being, what, the number five corner as an undrafted rookie to a bona fide number one, travels with star receivers in one season?
I think you know, that play in the Super Bowl was like a mushroom in Mario or something. I mean, it's literally...
Yeah, and he leveled up or something.
Yeah, he leveled up in one single play, and now he's just that guy. It really is incredible. You remember before the season there was all that talk about how, well, they don't know about Malcolm Butler, and not sure if he's going to play, and now he's a star. I mean, it's really the run-of-the-mill situation with the Patriots by now.
It's astounding, and I didn't think they'd be able to play the way they did, man-to-man. I mean, they play a lot of man coverage. You got to have corners to do that. They not only have played that, they went in with the season with the plan to play that, which means they had an idea of what Butler was going to be for them, and I just wonder what gave them that idea. Because, and I know we're getting off track a little bit here, but the other thing is cornerbacks, the position, that has more first-rounders per capita than any position in football, because it takes the most raw athletic talent. So to see an undrafted corner do what he's doing, and even Logan Ryan, who was only a third-round pick, and Justin Coleman played earlier this year, and now Leonard Johnson in there. You know, NFL teams that are well-coached and well-put-together, and Minnesota's another example in what they did against Arizona, they can survive injuries pretty well. So I think the teams that are heading in the postseason now, I think they're better equipped to handle injuries than the ones that have been rocked by them earlier in the year.
There's a cornerback conversation I want to have later in the podcast, but for right now, let me actually answer your question. And the team, I don't know if there is an answer either, but you said, what about Thomas Rawls and what about Marshawn Lynch and what about that Seattle offense?
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years ago, no way would they have been able to survive losing their best running back. If that was Lynch at the time, if it's Rawls now, a guy who can overcome not great play up front, moderate play up front, is somebody that can outpace his offensive line. There aren't many running backs who could do that. Rawls was doing that. Lynch did forever. Now I'm not so worried. You know, even if it is Bryce Brown or DeJuan Harris, Russell Wilson, Barnwell wrote this today. He may be, or I think he wrote it yesterday, he wrote it this week. We're playing with time here. Russell Wilson just finished what might have been the greatest four-game stretch by a quarterback in the modern history of football. That guy is playing insane. Like, it is unfair that a team that had a generationally great defense, maybe one of the best five of all time, a dominant, best-in-the-league running game, now has a quarterback who's playing better than anyone else. Being a Seahawks fan right now is just a charm to life.
No question. And what's remarkable about Wilson, and it's like a flip or a switch has been flipped, is he's doing it from the pocket.
Yeah.
And not just, you know, people mistake what it means to play from the pocket. They think like a play action pass where you throw a deep bomb where it's a defined read and you're either throwing a bomb or checking it down. They think, well, he threw it from the pocket, so that's playing from the pocket. That's not what people mean or not what coaches mean when you talk about it. Playing from the pocket is dropping back three-step, especially five-step, and operating with multiple progressions and reading the defense and doing it all within the timing of the play, not throwing defined reads. You can throw a defined read with a bad pocket passer because, you know, there's nothing for him to process. Wilson has never been a great processor from the pocket. I'm convinced it's because he doesn't see well. The height does factor in. But they've spread out the last few weeks, putting the receivers outside the field numbers plus split formations, and you widen the defense, you widen the field, and you do that. That takes away some of the vision issues, and they've let Wilson just throw from the pocket, and he's responded tremendously. I've never seen a QB midstream like this all of a sudden figure out how to be a pocket passer. I hope it holds up, because if it does, then we've got another superstar quarterback to deal with.
He's been incredibly impressive. I mean, Doug Baldwin's playing well. He's just putting up monster numbers. Yep. Tyler Lockett is – anyone who watched Tyler Lockett at Kansas State knew he could be a fun player. In that offense, you just didn't know what kind of player he could be. And now he's a dynamite threat in that offense. It's really amazing to see it happen. All right, so
this is the first time all year, though, they haven't had to do this without much of a running game. And I think at least the way teams will play them initially, I think they're going to get treated like they don't. Who do they have this week? Who's Seattle going against again?
That's a great question.
It's Cleveland, right? It's Cleveland.
So I could run on Cleveland.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, maybe we'll have to wait until next week. I was going to say, I would guess Cleveland would put both safeties back and make Russell – or, you know, make someone other than Russell Wilson beat him. But, you know, Cleveland's run defense has just been so bad the last 2 years. Maybe we don't get a great vision of how things will be with Bryce Brown. I think they're going to miss Thomas Rawls, though, is what I'm getting at. I thought he looked like a poor man's Adrian Peterson this season.
He was awesome. And just if you need one more argument about why you shouldn't draft the running back high – Thomas Rawls is here. Thomas Rawls is here to give you what you want. All right, let's get to one more team that was dealing with a couple guys nicked up coming into this game, but it didn't seem to matter. Kansas City doesn't have Justin Houston. They still destroy the Chargers offense. Right now, you know, you're looking at two teams that I feel are the dangerous AFC wildcards. You're looking at Pittsburgh behind that terrifying offense, and you're looking at KC behind what's looking like a very scary defense. This is a team right now that in a lot of ways resembles the defense they had a couple years ago when they made that push to the playoffs. And I guess I would ask you, what are you seeing from Kansas City's defense that has made them that team again?
Well, they have a couple of things. I think obviously you need Houston in the lineup in the long haul because he and Tom Bahaly give you the edge rushing presence, and that's, we all know how important that is. They've got corners who can play man-to-man, and when you have enough corners who can do that, and they haven't had that in the past few years. You know, Marcus Cooper was a liability at times. Yep. They were never great across from Sean Smith. Well, now they are. Marcus Peters, a rookie, first-round rookie, he's been sensational. So when you have guys that can play man-to-man, you can do any kind of disguise you want, and you can do any kind of blitz from the disguise most specifically. And the other thing is keep in mind their safeties can also play man-to-man. A lot of times, if you're weak at one man-to-man spot, and the offense figures it out and knows it, and most of them do, then now you're hindered. But if your safeties can hold up in man coverage, you're not going to be weak at those positions. They play extra safeties. They go with a dime package. So when you put extra safeties on the field, you're athletic enough, you can cover. And those blitzes they do, you cover more ground with the blitzes because the blitzers are faster because they're safeties. They're not linebackers. So there's a lot this team can do, and they can do it all out of disguise when they want to. And Bob Sutton, their coordinator, is one of the best in the league with that. So I agree with you. They're a tough team, but Mays, you said, yeah, they've got the defense they have when they, you know, they went in the playoffs a few years ago. They've also got the same offense that they had, only really minus Jamaal Charles. And I watch them on film every single week, and I think the defense looks great, and the offense I wouldn't mind playing against in the postseason.
They're not scary. And Charles was a big part of the engine that made them what they were when they actually could rip off some big plays here and there. For me, on the defensive side, I see them getting contributions from guys in the same way they did that year that weren't around last year. You know, Derek Johnson gets hurt. He's back this year. What a ridiculously underrated career that dude has had. I mean, he's just been the beat goes on every single year of, oh, that's one of the best inside linebackers in football. Cool. And then we have a situation with Eric Berry where he's playing again. And he's playing well.
And he's playing better, too. He's gotten better as each week has gone along, which would be expected, you know, to come back from what he's coming back from. That's he's having a nice season. And then the other guy, I don't know if you were going to mention him, Hussein Abdullah, who I think he was hurt last week. He was hurt in the game I watched on film against the Raiders the week before. When he's healthy, he gives him a lot of multiplicity. He plays linebacker in their dime, but he's a safety. So you put Abdullah with Derek Johnson together, that's a lot of speed up the middle of the field for them.
Totally. And I think that the Eric Berry story is a great one. And so is the Derek Johnson one. Coming back from that injury at that age, and it's good stories combined with good play, and it's really made them dangerous.
You know, Johnson would be on an all late bloomer team. Like if you were to take guys that were high draft picks and like Jerry Hughes, you know, or Roddy White, or, you know, guys that didn't do anything their first 2 years, and then all of a sudden they became exactly what we thought they'd be. Johnson would be first team all bloomer for the last 20 years.
Is Cordarrelle Patterson the opposite of that?
Yeah, he would be exactly the opposite, unless you want to include special teams, which I never do because I don't really watch special teams. But yeah, Cordarrelle Patterson, unfortunately, you know, and there's a lot of guys who would be the opposite of that too. That's called the all bust team, and people love talking about that.
Oh no, I'm talking about guys who were really good and really impactful as rookies, and then we never heard from them again. I guess Robert Griffin would be the
captain
of that
team. Oh, okay,
like
Michael Clayton. I remember Michael Clayton of the Bucks was like that. Kerry Colbert that same year with the Panthers had a year like that. That would be an interesting team as well. That would be a fascinating team.
And it's the RG3 All-Stars, which is sad but true.
Ooh, yeah. That's the captain. You got that. All right, the NFL season is reaching its crescendo, which means that season-long fantasy football is coming to an end. In the old days, everyone but the top few players in your league had long since dropped out. But now on FanDuel, you can play fantasy sports all year long. So here's a great offer for our listeners. When you use our code THEMMQB at FanDuel.com, you can enter a no-risk tournament. That's any tournament offered on FanDuel up to $10. If you win, you keep the money. If you lose, FanDuel will refund your account guaranteed. So FanDuel, it's the best place to play 1 week fantasy football. Building a team, it's easy and fun. You just pick your players and stay under the salary cap. Entry fees start at just $1, so there's a league for everyone. It's also got NBA and NHL. FanDuel, it's not just for large tournaments. You set it up in private leagues, play with your friends. That's usually the most fun. To get started, go to FanDuel.com, click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, and use the code THEMMQB and sign up now. And again, here's a great new offer for our listeners. If you enter a league and you don't win, FanDuel will refund your money. That's any tournament you want, up to $10. The only way to get this no-lose offer is to go to FanDuel.com, click on the microphone, upper right-hand corner, code THEMMQB.
So here's your first question about who you're putting in your FanDuel lineup this week, because neither entity, is going to be very highly valued. And that's going to be Ben Roethlisberger playing against the Broncos defense and the Broncos defense playing against the Steelers offense. So I love these kind of games. These are like my favorite kind of games. We have unstoppable force, immovable object, and for the most part, the defense usually tends to win. But right now, I don't know. I'm kind of leaning towards Pittsburgh.
Well, so let's kind of map it out. Let's see how will they play against them. I think what we're going to see, Denver plays man-to-man. We've seen that now, and I would expect they would do that again against Pittsburgh. I would think they'll put Talib on Martavis Bryant. They've only matched Talib up in man coverage twice this year on specific guys. It was Calvin Johnson in week 3, and I am blanking on the other guy. It was Dante Moncrief against Indianapolis in week 10 because they didn't want Talib on T.Y. Hilton. I think we're going to see the same thing. They don't want Talib on Antonio Brown. They're going to want him on Bryant. You put Chris Harris on Brown. So if I've told you those are the matchups, and let's say they don't blitz, because Denver doesn't blitz if they don't have to generally, they rush four, they play two safeties in coverage, they have Talib on Bryant, they've got Harris on Brown, Roby takes Marcus Wheaton. How do you feel about the matchup at face value now?
I don't know. I really don't know. I just think that Roethlisberger's playing well enough that I'm still going to give it to him. That makes sense. I think that
You've got to interview him this week, don't you?
I do. I actually am in Pittsburgh right now to talk to some of the Steelers. So maybe I'll have a better sense of it after I see what the vibe is like. After being in Carolina last week, I was like, oh man, the Panthers are going to stomp Atlanta. It's going to be so bad.
Yeah, and it was. That was as good a performance both sides of the ball as I've seen on film, I think, this season. The defense was sharp. Newton had probably his best game of the year. Maybe in some respects his best as a pro, just because he did so many things correctly. And I think Newton right now, there are two guys that are playing out of their minds, maybe three. We talked about Russell Wilson. The other to me is Cam Newton, also playing from the pocket, which he hasn't always done before. And another guy who hasn't always done it before, and that's the guy you've talked about, Ben Roethlisberger. I agree with you. I wrote it this week on MMQB. I think he's as good as any guy in the league right now.
Oh, I totally agree. But, you know, Denver, that offense, that defense is for real. There's no denying that. I think Wade Phillips has done an incredible job. I mean, there's no understating how important and how good of a defensive coordinator he is. But when you're looking at those matchups, they make sense to me. I think that Harris just, in a way, he can improv as a corner in the same ways that Brown can improv as a wide receiver. I don't know if that makes sense. But it just
does make sense. Yeah, that's not hard. I see what you're saying. I think the advantage in that case always goes to the wide receiver inherently.
Totally.
But when things break down, yeah, Harris is one of the best in the league at surviving when the timing of the play breaks down. I would agree with that.
So just his ability to kind of move around and just like his hips are incredible. Like just his ability to keep swiveling and to keep defensive plays alive when they shouldn't be alive. That makes him a better matchup for Brown than a lot of people are. And obviously Tlaib is a monster. So just physically he stacks up with Brian a little bit better. I'm going to give the edge to Pittsburgh. And that's even when I build this game in my mind, I see them having a hard time running the ball, and I still think they're going to be okay. I think they're going to throw it better than anyone has been able to on Denver all year.
Yeah, I would agree. I'd give the edge to Pittsburgh for two reasons. One, the Bryant-Tlaib matchup. I think Tlaib's a sensational player. He's a little bit stiff. He's not a quick twitch guy. And why that's important is because Bryant shares Tlaib's body type, but Bryant is quick twitch. That's what makes him so sensational. So there's that one piece. And the other piece is you can defeat man coverage through play design if you commit to that. You can do pick routes, crossing patterns, trips, bunch releases, wide receiver screens to a certain degree. And Pittsburgh's very good at that.
Yeah, I mean, this is a matchup of two really good coordinators. I think what Todd Haley has done with that offense is underrated. And I think overall in the game, I'm slightly giving the edge to Pittsburgh, and that's because of what's happening on the other side of the ball. I'm a little bit worried about Denver's offense. And I think that part of it starts with Brock Osweiler having PTSD after what Khalil Mack did to him last week.
Maze, you're being hard on Osweiler now. You know, and Yeah, he got his lunch eaten, but I thought he did a good job of at least hanging in the pocket. He didn't start to perceive pressure as the game unfolded, and a lot of quarterbacks would have gotten jittery from the pocket after about the third or fourth sack, especially given that Mack had also hit him a few times when it wasn't a sack.
Oh, no, I wasn't talking about on Sunday. I'm talking about this Sunday. I feel like now that he's had some time to think about it and he's had some dreams that have starred Khalil Mack, it's going to get worse.
Do the Steelers have a Khalil Mack, though? I mean, they've got a lot of – they've got four first-round picks, but, none of those guys have turned into an edge bender, yeah.
No, very few people have Khalil Macks. I mean, this is – watching Khalil Mack play in college and watching it now, it's just one of those things. It's the same with Aaron Donald. Like, really? None of us thought this was going to happen? We weren't guaranteed for this to happen? We absolutely were. This dude had no chance of not turning into this guy. And it was the easiest thing in the world to predict of Khalil Mack going from a handful of sacks as a rookie to 15 as a second-year player. That's exactly the type of trajectory he was going to take.
I know, and I had a conversation with him about that at training camp, about that exactly. And I said to him, do you realize if you triple your sack total this year and you get 15, everyone's going to think you had a breakout year? And that's got to be a little bit frustrating because he's as good this year as he was last year. He was this good last season. They just didn't translate to sacks the way they are now. But all this talk we're having about pass rushing, he's probably an even better run defender.
It's crazy. He is the guy everyone thought JPP was 5 years ago. And he's a better pass rusher than JPP ever was. And that's the thing. I mean, I don't know who in the league is like him right now, except maybe Von Miller. And I don't even know if Von Miller is as good of a run defender. They were supposed to be the same guy coming in. And here's what I would do. Right now, today, I would say as a run defender, Mack is a little bit better. And I would still say as a pass rusher, Von Miller scares me a little bit more. So if that's the little gap between them on either side, they're even. So, but outside of those two, I can't envision a guy that's similar to them.
Yeah, no, not off the edge. Not off the edge. The only guy who's got the kind of twitch they do relative to his position, and you mentioned him already, is Aaron Donald.
Yeah.
And of course, we can always, we can always throw J.J. Watt into this conversation. I guess we're making this a non-J.J. Watt conversation.
Yeah, it was a non-edge defender conversation, too. I mean, Watt plays so much inside, and Michael Bennett, right, I think, has flashes of that kind of thing. It doesn't happen all the time, but if there's a class below, I think he's at the top of that. So, but right now there's nobody like this dude except for Von Miller, and that's pretty good company. So Denver's one of those teams that they're fighting to hang on to that first round bye. In the NFC, it looks like that second first round bye is pretty locked up, and that's by the Arizona Cardinals. And I don't know, it seems like right now, because of what's happening in Carolina, Arizona is a really, really good team that's somehow flying a little bit under the radar. They're not getting the attention that a team with this sort of contender status normally would. Do you still feel like they are as dangerous as any team in the NFC to go to the Super Bowl?
Yes, without any hesitation. Absolutely. Because, they've got the quarterback to do it. They've got the system to do it. No quarterback fits his team's system better than Carson Palmer fits Bruce Arians in the Cardinals system.
Yep.
It's an intermediate, deep intermediate passing game. You've got to do a lot with setting protections. You've got to hang in the pocket. And you've got to make stick throws with arm strength. And that's always been Palmer's game. So, and I like that. I think they're going to have, you know, the run game. We talked about this, Maze, when we first did the podcast 2 weeks ago. We thought the run game would look better with David Johnson back there instead of Chris Johnson. And so far, that's come to fruition. They have looked better with David Johnson. So that's only the offense. And you go to the defense, and it's a high volume defense. They've also got man corners. They also play dime, just like we talked about with the Chiefs. And they do a ton with pressure concepts. And they've got better man corners, really, than Kansas City, because they've got one that can travel with your number one wide receiver.
That team, that's an embarrassment of riches at that position. It's not like they needed more defensive backs to emerge. And now you have Patrick Peterson back. I mean, just back to form, which good for him, because that I like to see him playing at this level. And then you got guys like Justin Bethel, who you never expected them to be serious contributors that really put this defense over the top, and they are. And then you get Matthew back at 100%. It's kind of unfair. And I think that type of
improvement. Well, one more, too. Tony Jefferson's played well too. He's played 60% of the snaps. Yeah.
And Rashad Johnson's not a bad player. It's kind of ridiculous. And I feel like that has been allowed them to overcome maybe some step backs in the front seven. Their inside linebackers are still nothing to write home about. I think that they've lost a little bit of interior juice with an underrated guy like Dan Williams leaving in the offseason. Marcus Golden has been good, but he's still not a pass rushing star. But right now, it doesn't really matter. I mean, that secondary is able to make up for it.
Me ask you one more about one guy. Well, I'm going to make a comment, and I'm going to ask you about a guy. I think Dwight Freeney's looked like Dwight Freeney, and he's because he's playing 20 to 25 snaps a game. So
what is
getting
this?
The real Dwight Freeney.
Like, what is happening? Why is Steve Keim allowed to do these things?
Because Maze, they've got a role for him, though. I mean, before the teams that were signing Freeney were trying to put him in as a starting, you know, every down player, 55 to 70 snaps a game. That's just not where he's at now. And we see when they rotate a ton of guys in Arizona. They've got probably a deeper rotation in their front seven than any team in the league, and Freeney's a part of that. But the guy I wanted to ask you about, because you said their linebackers aren't anything to write home about, are you counting Deion Buchanan as a linebacker or a safety in that statement?
That's a good question. In that statement, I was counting him as a safety, but I should probably count him as a linebacker.
Yeah. I get what you're saying. But he does play linebacker for him, and it's remarkable because he's undersized and he's kind of lanky, which you would think would make him susceptible to getting blocked. But he slithers through traffic. He's explosive. He's dynamic. I also think Kevin Minter's been okay for them, and I mean that in a good way, because Kevin Minter, they thought was bad for the first 2 years. I mean, they would tell you privately they thought that. They told you that by not playing him at all when he was a second-round pick. And they've gotten a good performance out of him, which really speaks to the coaching. We talked about that all late bloomer team. I bet if we make the late bloomer team, you know, mentors in consideration, and a lot of those guys are coming from good coaching staffs.
So with Dwight Freeney, I went to see Pulp Fiction was playing at the Music Box Theater in Chicago a couple weeks ago. So I went to see Pulp Fiction in the movie theater. And the feeling of watching Pulp Fiction in the movie theater is similar to the feeling I had watching Dwight Freeney get that sack on Monday night. It transports me to a place and a time where I'm just a happy person. And life was simpler and everything was better. And I just loved being there. And I'm just glad Dwight Freeney is in my life doing these things.
Well, and also send a little thank you to Teddy Bridgewater, because not only did he hold the ball a little long on that play, but he also missed a wide open Jarius Wright on the play before on the exact same route combination as they'd completed for 22 yards two plays before. So Dwight Freeney's gotten a little bit of help from the opponent, but Pulp Fiction, I can roll with that.
So we talked a lot about effusive praise for the Cardinals for the last 5 minutes, but I guess the question is, do you envision a scenario in which this Philadelphia team can put up a fight and beat this Cardinals team?
Well, I mean, if they get a couple of special teams touchdowns and a exactly. Malcolm Jenkins interception return, yeah. You know, Philadelphia, they're 6-7. They haven't looked sharp still. They've been a little better. I know they're talking up Bradford now. It looks like they've kind of getting things figured out at running back. It's still not a crisp offense, and it's not a hard offense to play against is the problem. They don't do a lot of different things. And so what they're counting on beating you with in order to be hard is going with pace and tempo and out-executing you. But the execution hasn't been there. They're not very fast on offense. Quarterback's been a problem. And therefore, the tempo becomes irrelevant. So this will be a good test for them because Arizona's a defense, I think, that can compete with them playing fast. They can play. If you play man coverage, it's easier to match up against a fast tempo offense because you just say, I got him, you got him, let's go. You don't have to organize your zones. And Arizona, as we talked about, they rotate a lot of guys. So I don't think the tempo is going to be as big a deal against them.
And Arizona literally wins every one-on-one matchup in that secondary receiving core battle. Every single one.
Yeah, they do.
There isn't a spot where they're
outmanned. Philly has no one who can get open on their own. And that's not an accident, by the way. Chip Kelly believes, he'd never say this, but his actions, which always speak louder than words, they paint this in bold-faced letters. He believes the system can take care of that stuff.
And when you saw what they did, what they were able to do against the Cardinals last year offensively, they had Jeremy Maclin. Jeremy Maclin's really good. They don't have Jeremy Maclin anymore. They don't have anyone close.
No. Yeah. No, it's a totally different Eagles offense, without question. Their offensive line hasn't been the same either, which means the running game's not the same. It's just not a good Eagles offense. So in order for this game to go Philly's way, could they break out? Yeah, I mean, anyone can do that any week. But based on all the facts we have in front of us, it'll have to be a low-scoring game. And just the concept of that, facing Arizona in a low-scoring game seems like a difficult proposition because I don't think Arizona I don't think it's gonna you can't just hold them to under 20 points. They're not that kind of offense.
No. And while we're talking about teams with a bunch of receivers that can't get open, let's talk about the Bears playing against the Vikings next week.
I thought you were gonna say let's talk about the Vikings playing against the Bears next week, because I think it's true with both of these teams.
I was watching the Bears play the Washington Breadsticks on Sunday, and Deontay Thompson caught like a 35-yard pass, and I'm as big a Bears fan as just about anybody. And as soon as he gets up, my first response, of course, is, who the hell is that? I literally had no idea who he was. And that's where we are with this Bears team. The last 2 weeks have been miserable. I mean, just so incredibly heartbreaking. But this Bears team wasn't supposed to be good. It's not as if I'm sitting there thinking, God, we missed our shot at a playoff run. I'm thinking,
right,
man, it would have been kind of nice to not lose these games in horrific fashion. But what were we really playing for? I mean, when you're hurting.
You missed your shot at a top 10 draft pick is what wound up happening this year. I hate to be that guy. And I'm sure I believe the way you build a team is to win games. I think it's more important than getting draft picks is the whole winning culture thing and learning to win games. But this is one of the more overachieving teams in the NFL this season, and yet they're still 5-8. My guess is they're going to overhaul 50% of the roster at least this offseason.
There's nothing wrong with that, though. They should overhaul 50% of this roster.
Well, and they brought in guys. When you hire John Fox, you're not just bringing in a coach as a stopgap. You know, John Fox has a plan. He has a way he wants to play football. He has a very distinct idea of how a football team should be built, and they're going to work around that. Ryan Pace, the GM, will work to that. It makes sense. I mean, that's what they brought this staff in for, is to redo the football team. So just because they've been in some close games, that doesn't mean you ought to deviate from the plan.
I totally agree. And in a way, it's not only about draft picks. I mean, draft picks are whatever. J.J. Watt went at 11. I don't need a top 10 draft pick. It's more about, now I'm kind of hoping that they fall back a little bit and all the people who were really chomping at the bit to make Adam Gase their head coach aren't anymore. I mean, if they go 9-7 to make the wild card, people are saying, how do they do that? And the answer is probably Adam Gase turning Jay Cutler into a player he hadn't been in Chicago. Now I hope that question gets asked less and Adam Gase is back. And we're looking at an offense with Jay Cutler, Alshon Jeffrey, Kevin White. They go sign somebody like Kelechi Osemele, somebody like that. One more year of draft picks and Adam Gase being back. And now it's like, okay, now let's actually try to win the wild card. So I don't really mind what's happening right now. It's been awful in the moment, but in the long term, I'm okay with it.
you're the second Bears fan today I've had that conversation with, where you Bears fans have brought that up yourself. Is, oh my gosh, you know, all that's going to happen, we're going to lose Adam Gase now. And yet, you're probably going to lose him, because there's going to be probably 6 or 7 head coaching positions open up this year. And Gase has, he's gotten Cutler to be what everyone else has tried and really failed to get Cutler to be.
Just let me have this. Just for like another month, let me have this. I come on. I don't have much in my life.
Well, they got 3 games left. So if they win the next 3, Gase, do you think, is gone then? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, who knows? I mean, I think that anybody who's actually paying attention would take a shot on him, but I still don't want anyone to. I mean, this has been the best version of Cutler we've seen. He has a 92.2 quarterback rating, the highest he's had in Chicago. You know, Alshon Jeffery is allowed to be Alshon Jeffery in this offense. It's a really nice team. And I think it's a really nice basis of an offense, those two guys, with, you know, the idea of White coming back. Maybe you get Forte on the cheap. You have Langford. And I think that they need a lot of help on the line. I believe they're 25th in pressure rate. It's not a good group, and they got hurt a little bit. So they need some overhauling up there. But I like the pieces. I think that Eddie Goldman is coming on, which is nice. I think that Kyle Fuller's had a really nice second half of the season. I think Pernell McPhee is the type of free agent signing you don't see very often. You know, there are reasons for hope. And
You're a homer. We're gone like 3 or 4 minutes on Chicago now, and Minnesota's the team that's lost 2 but is still in playoff contention. This is the big game for the Vikings, and they're at home. It's their last home game, I believe, too, isn't it, for the year?
I was just about to transition. You're taking it away from me.
All right, well, I'm just crushing you on this, Bears. I apologize.
I was going to say that of all the teams in the league, the team that really should have the most reason for hope is probably Minnesota. Just based on having a lot of young talent. They started 6 rookies against the Cardinals last week, which is an insane amount. And if you look at the up and down their roster, they have some old guys. Peterson's kind of old. Terrence Newman's really old. Apparently he loves wine, if you read what Kevin Clark wrote today in the Wall Street Journal. And guys like Chad Greywin, but most of this team is really young. And I know that right now it looks like they're backsliding a little bit near the end of the year, but there's a lot of injuries. We talked about it earlier. And they're really young. This is a team that if they could have snuck into the wild card, which I think they still will, it's reason for celebration. But I still think they're well positioned going from like here on out. I don't know what you think.
I agree with you. I think I go back to the well-coached thing. Let's look at what they had. They went on a Thursday game on the road against probably the best team in the NFL in Arizona. I know Carolina's undefeated, but I think Arizona, you know, let's put second best team out of respect for Carolina at this point. But a team that's incredibly hard to play against on the road on a short week with half their defense down. And they were in that game, and they looked good. They looked well-coached offensively. A lot of the concepts out-leveraged Arizona's coverage principles, that's good coaching. And Anthony Harris, for example, a rookie safety, an undrafted rookie safety, flashed. You got an undrafted rookie safety that inserts the lineup in a complex scheme on a short week, and he plays extremely well. That's always a sign of good coaching. Mike Zimmer's done a tremendous job with this team, so I think they're absolutely heading in the right direction. They're young offensively. They're going to get older, and they're going to get better.
Who do you think is the most valuable player on a healthy Vikings defense?
On a healthy Vikings defense, Harrison Smith.
You think so? So you think that him out is the biggest hit they can take?
Yes, because what they do centers so much around disguise and pre-snap adjustments and blitz looks, and Harrison Smith's the catalyst of that. He's their most multiple guy. He's their rangiest. You know, Sendejo's also rangy. I don't think he's as important, but they've got rangy safeties, and that helps with the disguises that they do for their blitz stuff. So I think Harrison Smith's right up there, and, you know, I don't know if I'd pick a number two guy because I'm looking at, you know, well, I'll give you – let me give you a number 2, just based on the way he's played this year. He's probably not the second most because of the position he plays, but their second best player this season has been Linville Joseph at nose tackle.
And they were missing him on Sunday too. And I think
they were. He's another guy who was out.
And
yeah.
You could absolutely argue that Anthony Barr is their best player at the second level. So you're losing your best player at all 3 levels and still competing against a really dangerous Arizona offense. This team is good. And I think that they've made pretty much all the right decisions when it comes to who they have in positions of power. I mean, Teddy has yet to come along, but Mike Zimmer's doing a really, really nice job. Did you see what Sharif Floyd said about having to play nose last week?
What did he say? I noticed he played on film. He looked good, by the way. I thought he looked all right.
He's a good player, but he said it's pretty much everything, every bad thing you can imagine. That's what playing is. That's what playing knows is. Which he's right. It's miserable.
Well, and he probably got frustrated looking over at Tom Johnson playing his three technique spot and making some noise. Tom Johnson split some double teams, got in the backfield a few times. He played very well against an average Cardinals offensive line. So Sharif Floyd took one for the team a week ago, and he came out looking all right for it, I think. I was impressed with him.
The only thing that can make you long for playing defensive tackle in the world is having to play a couple games at nose.
No question.
All right, Andy, we're going to deviate a little bit from our normal kind of setup for these shows. We've been going a little long on these games, but I'm okay with it. I think we're settling in. So before we get to our last two games, let's get to a word from SeatGeek. Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers are undefeated. And as a sports fan, I am firmly in the camp that if you can be in attendance for history, you have to try. If you're in the city where something historic is going on, it is your duty as someone who wants to be a chronicler of sports history to go. The Golden State Warriors were playing in Phoenix when I was there for Thanksgiving, and I didn't buy a ticket. And you know what? I regret it. And if you're going to go to New Jersey this week to see Cam Newton and the Panthers try to preserve their undefeated season against the Giants, you should use SeatGeek. You can download the SeatGeek app on your phone or your iPhone or Android. It's free. It's light on data. You search for an event, find the deal near you, in this case, Panthers-Giants, and you enter our code MMQB. When you complete your purchase, SeatGeek will send you a $20 check or refund on PayPal. SeatGeek pulls all the ticket buying and selling options from other ticket sites into one place to save you time. SeatGeek also knows the fair market value of every ticket. They use that information to show you the best deals and help you find underpriced seats. So to redeem your promo code and get your $20 check, download the free SeatGeek app today. Enter promo code MMQB in the app, and SeatGeek will send you $20 once you've made your first SeatGeek purchase. For the NFL, the NBA, and the best concerts, use the SeatGeek app, and don't forget to enter our code MMQB for $20 off. All right, let's get into that game. Let's get into those Carolina Panthers against those New York Giants. As Peter King reminded me last week, the 1998 Broncos were 13-0, heading into the Meadowlands to play a New York Giants team, and they lost. And I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I'm not seeing that this week.
Well, we're not going to – I mean, we shouldn't be seeing it if we're to respect ourselves as analysts. I mean, we have to go off what we've seen on film. I remember that game, too, because Denver was supposed to play a Monday night game at Miami the next week, and Miami, you know, is the only undefeated team. And so that was a huge – it was going to be a huge hyped game, and then that, you know, the 98 season went in a different direction. Those Broncos wound up winning the Super Bowl still, though, and Carolina's equipped to do that. I know you're working on a really interesting story this week. I don't know if I'm supposed to spoil it at all or not, but I'll let you do the talking. They've got one of the best downfield passing games in the NFL, and I think it starts with a lot through the scheme.
I'm working on something tangentially related to downfield passing, and I think you saw that show up over and over again last week against Atlanta. I mean, there were a couple just beautiful throws that Newton pulled off for Ted Ginn. It was his only two catches of the game, and they really put it out of reach early. And he's just got great touch on those passes. He's really in the zone of where he has to put those balls, and that's how they've built this offense. They've said, okay, we've got five mauling offensive linemen up front. We're going to run it down your throat. And then when we're not doing that, we're going to beat you over the top. That is exactly what we're going to do. We have speed and we have power, and that's really all we have. And right now, with Cam Newton at the helm, that's enough of a recipe.
What people don't understand, I think, about – so they look at Atlanta, you know, gives up 38 to Carolina. They say, well, the Falcons got killed. You know, they didn't make any plays, which is, yeah, it's true. But Carolina's passing game success, it wasn't guys outplaying guys. It was that the play designs were beating the coverage calls. Yeah. And every coverage call has a vulnerability. Otherwise, if there was one that was not vulnerable in any way, then every team would use that coverage on every single snap. So what Carolina's gotten good at, and this is the Newton factor, Mike Shula's done a great job designing offense, but he's given Newton more power at the line of scrimmage. Newton's become a very smart quarterback, and he's getting them in and out of the right plays, and he's also identifying where the safeties are and immediately knowing what his route combinations mean from there. And anytime the play call defeats the defensive call, almost anytime, he actually left a few throws on the field last week, but virtually anytime, almost anytime, Newton's exploiting that, and they're exploiting it downfield. It's a fun offense to watch right now.
It really is. And the touchdown on the left sideline again was just gorgeous. And then
oh my God, that was an easy one to work. That was man coverage on that. It's actually zone, but man coverage on that part of the field. And that was an unbelievable throw. Great throw, will always beat man coverage.
And then the one to Dixon for the other touchdown. I don't know if you've seen the replay from the end zone view. He sneaks
I did, yeah. I watched the film on that. That was also unbelievable. It's only 4 yards, but that was as good as the other one.
He's playing at a really high level right now. I wrote something for the MMQB today about the relationship he's kind of developed with Steph Curry and the friendship they have and just kind of the conversations they've had back and forth.
Yeah.
It's fun.
I heard you got him to talk to you. I heard you got Cam Newton to give you a little bit of time, which anyone in the media knows that in and of itself is worth a Pulitzer.
I'm not sure how I made it happen. I'm not going to take any of the credit, but we had a conversation. It was very fun. You know, he just clearly is – it's something he was engaged about, which I think helps. You know, it's something different. And you can just – it's clear that he's having a good time. You know, he kind of snuck into Luke Kuechly's TV interview. That's where this team is. And when you're playing as well as he is, it's not hard to have fun.
Yeah.
Let's the one thing I want to talk about with this game that's not Cam Newton or Panthers offense related is, remember a couple weeks ago when the Giants were playing the Jets – and everyone was lamenting the fact that we weren't going to get Revis Beckham.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which, you know, that's sad. You know, Odell Beckham's a superstar, and Darrelle Revis has been really good. But we are getting Darrelle Revis against Odell Beckham, and we're just getting it this week. And Darrelle Revis' name is Josh Norman.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Norman has been traveling with number one receivers lately, and they haven't done that with him all year. And I think the reason he's doing it now is because they've got injuries at the other cornerback spot. Yep. Ben Wickery is out. It looks like they'll probably have to plug in Finnegan because Charles Tillman's not – I heard he has a partially torn ACL. So Norman, this is his trial now. You know, we've seen him thrive all season. He hasn't been used as a pure number one yet, which is not a discredit to him at all. It's just the nature of their defense. But now he's got to be a pure number one. And he rose to the challenge a week ago. I hadn't thought about that matchup with Beckham. That'll be a good one. And, you know, they'll give him some help because it's a zone-based defense, and that's the nature of zone.
Sure.
And they're very good at that. They're the best zone principal team in the league in terms of spacing and understanding where one another is.
Do you feel like there's really no way to overhype what Beckham is doing? I mean, there are two players in the history of the NFL to have at least 1,300 yards in their first two seasons. One is Randy Moss, who, in my opinion, is the second best wide receiver ever, and it's not particularly close. The other is Odell Beckham. Do you feel like this is a product of era, or do you think that we really are seeing someone who is about to build himself a very special career?
Can I say both? I mean,
sure.
Can I just totally evade the question?
Yes.
Think it's both. I'm a little nervous about Beckham's ability to stay healthy long term. He just strikes me as... there's something subtly fragile about him, and I hope I'm wrong about that. But, you know, soft tissue injuries, I think his style of play, if anyone can catch him, you know, I think he could be vulnerable to leaving his body open. I don't know. He's as fun to watch as anybody in the league, though, certainly. And I think he's probably – I know I was in Greg Cosell's office last week. That's why I wasn't on the show. I was at NFL Films.
That's fun.
And I asked – yeah, oh, it was a blast. It's, you know, I thought I'd check in and see how the guys that I've learned from are watching film, and so I can keep learning. And I learned a lot just watching them watch film for a few days, watching with them, of course. But I asked Greg, who's followed these guys closely, of course, who would you want to have over the next 5 years, Antonio Brown or Beckham? Because I think they're very similar players. And he said, without any hesitation, he just said Beckham real quickly. And
that's funny.
You know how some things just kind of, yeah, they just kind of strike you. You know, I mean, that was Antonio Brown's not someone that gets the negative of a quick answer in a debate very often.
That's really funny. I can't remember. I don't know if I've ever met anyone who has a genuine enthusiasm for football the same way that Greg does. He's probably my favorite person with whom to have a conversation about football. You know, there are times where I've just called him and just been in an office. We've talked for a half hour just about nothing, which is always fun. It's like it's the best thing. But
he's the best there is out there. Right? And I say that as an analyst that I guess kind of theoretically competes with him. It's not a competition. Greg Cosell sets the standard all around the league, and there's a lot you can learn from a guy like that. You know, he's been doing it for 30 years. He's worked with quarterbacks, Phil Sims, Ron Jaworski every day for a lot of his career. So he's learned from some good people.
My question for you, kind of in that Beckham Brown role, who would you say right now, when you're watching that film, is your favorite cornerback in football? Not the best, necessarily. Maybe those things coincide. But your favorite cornerback in the league to just watch on film?
I would have said Revis until about 6 weeks ago. I think he slowed down the second half of this season. Let me ponder. I have a feeling you've got one on your mind. So can I ponder mine in the back of my mind and hear yours first?
I think mine is probably Chris Harris. Again, not the best by any stretch, but just the guy whose style of play I really enjoy. The fact that he started inside, can move out, just does it a lot of different ways. I think that he just has a really good nose for the ball. He's a good run defender. So I don't think he's the best corner in the league, but I think right now, just watching him on the field, I enjoy it the most.
I like guys that can play anywhere at cornerback, and there aren't very many of them. You know, Joe Hayden, when he's on his game, it's been a lost year for him, but when he's good, he's a guy like Harris, like you talked about, who can follow guys into the slot. He can play cover zero man on the perimeter. A guy like that who nobody talked about for a lot of years, and he's out of the league now, so it's irrelevant, but Ike Taylor was always like that in Pittsburgh. I really, really liked Ike Taylor a lot. Long arms, physical. Operates within the scheme. I like cornerbacks. To me, are supposed to the guys that don't get interceptions. I've never had a problem with that because the cornerback's job is to prevent receptions, not necessarily make interceptions. Totally. So I like those. Yeah, I like those guys. Ike Taylor couldn't catch anything. Nothing. Couldn't catch a cold. But he was one of the best ball stoppers in the league. I like ball stoppers. Chris Harris is a good answer. I don't know if he's my favorite, but I get. Yeah, I like the Chris Harris type of cornerbacks. You can do the most with them. Maybe Peterson's the guy for me this year in that regard.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a very good one.
Although he doesn't play the slot because they've got Matthew, who's so good there. Peterson rarely plays the slot. But that's probably a product of who they have around him, too.
Another guy that's been in that conversation for me in the last few years is Vontae Davis. He's kind of had a down year, but I think you can really say that about most of the guys in Indy.
Yeah, they have. Davis, I like Davis a lot as well. I'm bothered by the idea that he doesn't travel with number one receivers, though.
Yeah.
He only plays right corner. And I know for certain, I think they would like him to travel there in Indianapolis. And that hasn't come to fruition this year, which leads me to believe, you know, he can't do it. At least not at the level that he can do everything else.
Well, I mean, I think that it's really hurt their defense because teams just feast on Greg Toler. And you can see Houston probably trying to take advantage of that this week, just putting DeAndre Hopkins on the right side of their offense and not moving him for anything.
Yeah, that's the thing you get. This is our last game we're doing, obviously. This is a huge game, by the way. Texans, Colts, but they're both 6-7.
It's
a playoff game.
It's so weird.
For all intents and purposes. Well, what happens when you have corners like Indy does, and they've always lived with this, so it's not the worst thing, but you're right. You can dictate matchups against them by where you line your wide receivers, and Houston is exceptionally good at that, and they've got only one guy to work with in that sense, and Hopkins, and it's worked out really well for them this year. He's had a very, very nice season. I don't know what to make of Hopkins, to be honest with you, because he doesn't look dynamic to me, but his production is, you can't argue with it.
He and Alshon Jeffrey remind me of each other a little bit. Guys that I don't see them being people who run away from defenders, but use their bodies really well, are good at the catch point, strong hands. Maybe, you know, he's kind of Brandon Marshall-y. I think Marshall's more physical in terms of being able to body up corners, but I think Hopkins is better at using his body. I know I just said two Bears receivers, but I said them because they don't have top-end speed in the same way that DeAndre Hopkins doesn't. And it's really hard to dominate.
I agree with you. Alshon Jeffrey, though, he's long. He's not fast, but it doesn't matter because he's so long. And Hopkins isn't long. He's almost stubby looking even. And but whatever it is, you know, he knows how to get open. Let's put it this way. I think he's probably this year been, other than Antonio Brown, who's always the top of this category, and maybe Beckham just because of the nature of it, Hopkins is as good uncovering at the end of a route as anybody in the league right now. He's not quick. He's not fast. So he's not going to, he's fast, but he takes a long time to get his speed built up. So he's not really fast. And he needs to separate through mechanics. And I think he's done that mechanically. He gets separation at the end of a route better than anyone in the NFL.
So when we're looking at this game, you know, you have DeAndre Hopkins on the Texans side. You have, even with a club, J.J. Watt on that side. Do you feel like with this quarterback matchup, it's T.J. Yates against Charlie Whitehurst, which, good God. But
I forgot. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, wow. This is a big-time playoff matchup featuring probably the two most iconic third-string or classic backup quarterbacks of the last 5 years.
Listen, Charlie Whitehurst was the Grantwood NFL podcast favorite quarterback. Because if you've ever seen anything about how Charlie Whitehurst comports himself in life, that dude does it right. He knows what's happening. He is better at being a backup quarterback in terms of taking advantage of the lifestyle than anyone ever. And I have to respect him for it. And I think that he's going to drive this Indianapolis Colts offense, probably not to the limit, but to some sort of limit. And I don't know, but I think that for right now with these two teams, I think that with Hopkins on one side for Indy, and I think with what they have on defense, still, even if you take last week into account, I think this is the more dangerous team of the two going into the playoffs.
Is Houston, you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. I would agree with that. That defense has been outstanding. It's amongst the league leaders in all the statistical categories. And they can stop the run with both safeties back deep. And that's not true of a lot of defenses. And that gives them a lot of dimension. They can do a lot. If you have both safeties back, you can do almost anything schematically. And so you add a team that already has J.J. Watt to the wrinkle of they could also do anything schematically, and they got a good coordinator in Romeo Crennel. That's a dangerous combination. So I would agree with you. And I was going to watch the Indy Jacksonville film actually right after we got done with this podcast.
Why?
I'm a little concerned. I try to get through every game, and at some point it's going to be draft time, and I figure one of those teams will be a, you know, top 15 pick. But I'm a little concerned that Indianapolis has gotten blown out the way they have the last 2 weeks. I mean, that's, you never want to get blown out, and it's looked very ugly. I don't know what happened in that game, though.
And it wasn't because, you know, Bortles and those receivers were having a monster game. I think they really got beat up in every way, shape, and form, which that's not what you want. And it's been a lost season for the Colts. I mean, even if they somehow sneak into the playoffs, I kind of throw my hands up and say, who cares? I mean, this was supposed to be the year where they kind of took the AFC by storm, and we couldn't be further from that. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Chuck Pagano in the offseason. I don't know if he's back.
I'm laughing at your reaction to my comment about watching the – I was feeling pretty good about that, watching Jacksonville, Indy. And it seems like I always wind up watching Jacksonville late at night, probably because I figure no one pays attention on Twitter and I tweet my film notes sometimes. So, but you said why, and that just, like, I answered you, but after it set in, it kind of, like, took all the air out of me. Like, now
I didn't mean to do that to you. Now I feel bad.
I'll get it back. Something will happen. You know what I'm curious to see? This is the nerd in me. I remember those teams played in week 3, I recall, and Jacksonville destroyed Indianapolis with long stunts where they looped the defensive end around to the A-gap. I'm curious to see if they did that again. And once they did that, that kind of did the whole blueprint thing. Other teams got Indy with those. And that's how Andrew Luck got hurt. Denver pounded him with that. So now I'll learn a lot about the Colts on film this week by how they adjusted to the long stunts. And now I'm back up and motivated.
I love that on this podcast, I get out nerded all of the time. I love that there is no Bardwell to sit there in judgment of me as I talk about wanting to watch the Jaguars' long stunts. I'm on the other side of that coin. And you know what? It feels nice. I like it.
Yeah. Well, we're in the same pod then.
All right. I think that's all we got. I think, you know, we went long on a few things, but I think that it was a good time. We did this all right. It's you and me. We're okay. We're going to get through this.
I enjoyed this a lot with you, Maze, and I look forward to getting Klemko back next week. But this was, I think we treaded water pretty well here.
Well, we'll be back with more Nerding Out next week. Until then, we want to thank our producer, Daniel Friedman. Well, we want to thank our researcher, Don Daigle, and we'll be back next week. There'll be more football. We'll be closer to the playoffs. And I think that's all we got.
Yeah. And real quick, also shout out to Ryan Lacey, who helped out with John Daigle this week. John Daigle had a family thing come up. We wish him the best. Ryan Lacey did a great job putting our show together this week.
Thanks, Ryan. I appreciate it. And I appreciate you guys for listening. And we'll be back next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert. Another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.